Today's guests represent a firm that sits at the intersection of strategy, finance, and analytics. You're not going to want to miss this insightful conversation as we talk about what it looks like to serve private equity clients, our best advice for young professionals, and what it takes to break into a top consulting role. Welcome to Strategy Simplified.
Hey, Strategy Simplified listeners, do we have a treat for you today? I'm joined by Mitch and Charles from Palm Tree. Mitch is a managing director at Palm Tree and Charles is in talent acquisition. And we're just really, really excited for you to get a chance to hear from them today, hear about the interesting work that the firm is doing, hear about their career arcs and how they got to where they are today. And if you're interested in a unique type of consulting, why Palm Tree may or may not be a fit for you. So let's dive in. We love to kick off with some fun questions just so we can get to know you a little bit better. So Mitch, I'm gonna throw this to you first. Give me one person from history who you'd love to get dinner with, dead or alive.
Yeah, and I think about this question a little bit too, because the easy answer is probably someone from my family, but I think this one really means more on the famous spectrum than people in my family. So, I always go back to, I'm big into history, really enjoy kind of understanding where you've been to kind of get an understanding of possibly where you're headed, and try not to repeat that, or repeat it if it's good. So for me, it's maybe not one person in particular, but around the time of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, thinking about having a conversation with someone in that room, someone before being in that room, after being in that room, just a transformative time in this country's history, certainly in the world's history, and just the vision and, you know, the ability to pull that off in that time is just incredible to me, and would love to have, you know, been a fly on the wall and listen in.
I love that. I'm going to push you a little bit. If you had to pick one founding father, who would it be?
You know, I actually watched the John Adams documentary on HBO, and, you know, he seems like he was a big integral portion of that, you know, from the legal structuring standpoint, writing drafting a lot of it, right? And so perhaps even a major visionary of the whole entire process. So I would say probably John Adams, I'd pick him.
I love that. I think I'd also, you know, love to see how Adams, Jefferson, right? Guys with very varying personalities, personal rivalries, put that to the side.
Exactly. And it was interesting too, because they weren't all on the same page necessarily for the grand scheme of what they thought America could be. And so it was to have all of that there and have the peace of mind to say, yeah, we don't all agree on every point, but there is some through lines here to get right. It's remarkable, really.
100% agree. Love it. Charles, excited to have you on the podcast. Would love to just get to know you a little bit better. Share with us one item from your bucket list.
One item from my bucket list. I would like to sail in the Transpac Regatta from Southern California over to Honolulu. I've done a lot of sailing in the past and I've done a lot of regattas. I haven't done that one. So it's at the top of my list. I don't know if it's going to happen at this stage because I have a little girl on the way in about a month, but maybe one day.
I love that. I'm not a sailor at all, but that sounds awesome. So you'll have to send us a photo or a video.
I'll send you some pictures when I do it. Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. I love it. Mitch, how about your favorite ice cream flavor? And the only thing I'll say here is vanilla is not an option.
Well, my answer includes vanilla. Is that bad? Actually, my favorite flavor would either be one of two things, something with coffee in it or mint chocolate chip. But the affogato is actually my favorite dessert. It is actually vanilla ice cream with espresso poured on top. So I don't know if that counts as an answer, but, you know, coffee flavored ice cream, I guess, would probably win.
I guess we'll let that go. You know, and I'm a coffee junkie, so I can't be too mad about that.
Exactly.
Awesome. Charles, how about, you know, your number one travel destination after the world opens back up? So I know, right, you already talked about kind of sailing to Honolulu, but besides for that, where do you want to go?
Fair question. And I'm going to go to an oldie but goodie. I have been to Hawaii a lot of times in my life. I actually lived out there for a number of times, or a number of years, I should say. But I have not been back since the pandemic, and we do have our first child on the way. So I'm hoping that in August or September, I will be able to bring her out to Maui to meet some friends and family who are out there and show her kind of the pretty side of this country for sure. One of the prettier sides. So yeah, it's not very original, but that will probably be the first time I get on an airplane, and unless I'm flying out to the office, of course, in Los Angeles.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing. And then one more here. Mitch, what's one fun hobby that you have? What do you like to do outside of work?
Yeah, I was hoping you wouldn't ask me this question because I don't have too many hobbies. I actually have a 3-year-old and now a 3-month-old. So, you know, family is probably my top thing I do outside of work. You know, family first, of course. But I do like to stay active. So working out, sports, any type of outdoor activity that I can get involved with, especially being in Michigan, in the Detroit area, we have a long winter. So any chance I get to be outside is something I will jump at.
I love that. Well, both of you guys have young kids. So really your hobby is trying to steal sleep whenever you can.
Right. That's right. Exactly.
Okay. Well, let's get into it. Mitch, I'd love to just start. You know, could you just give us an overview of who Palm Tree is and what Palm Tree does? Y'all, at least in my mind, hold a really unique place on the consulting spectrum and have a really unique value proposition. So can you explain to me and to our listeners, right, what Palm Tree does and what makes y'all unique?
Yeah, Palm Tree is really designed as a full service provider we'll call it outsourced services across the spectrum of a private equity transaction or life cycle. So we break ourselves up into 3 main buckets: transactions, transitions, and transformations. Transactions really houses 2 things. We have an in-house investment banking practice and capital markets specialty within that investment banking practice. So for the front end, the deal side, right? And then we have a financial due diligence practice ran by a colleague of mine, Chris Felderman. He's a multiple 10, 12 year vet out of PwC, ran his own consulting firm for a number of years, and then came to join Palm Tree, I think 2 or 3 years ago, right, Charlie?
Yep, that's
and,
right.
And runs that practice for us. Transitions is my practice. That's where I focus. And transformations to some degree, but they lead into themselves. So transitions is really all about that post-close, first 100-day execution and value creation plan development. And then transformations is ultimately value creation execution. So if we think transition really is the easiest way to put it is a company comes in and it's in the side of the finance, you know, it's finance and accounting, right? So it's company has been stood up by an investment bank in a sell side process. They are furnishing all the information. They're putting together nice summary charts. And you know, when the company leaves the protection of that investment bank and goes under new ownership, especially in the middle market, a lot of that information flow falls off. A lot of the visibility drops off. And so we're here to come in and shepherd that company through that transitionary phase, because now private equity is asking a lot of new questions, want to see a lot of different data points, and we can help the team organize themselves to get that information stood up, get processes in place, and then help that management team even take time to recruit the right talent, let's say, if they don't have it on site. And then in the transformation side of the business, it's really more process oriented. So think working capital or cash flow management, you know, in a more broader sense, things that drive ultimately enterprise value creation initiatives. So, you know, cash flow improvement, cost reduction opportunities, those types of levers that private equity likes to pull. We are there to, you know, help identify them in the transitionary phase and execute on them in the transformation phase.
Amazing. That's really unique, the combination of, you know, an IB function and advisory function inside of the same firm. So really, you're a one-stop shop for private equity, huh?
Well, that's right. That's the way we looked at it is, you know, there weren't many instances. And when you run a consulting practice, and this is where I came from in my previous life, too, we had some M&A deal flow to be able to provide something other than just asking for consulting work. It's nice to be able to have that reciprocative type relationship. you know, bringing in M&A deal flow, or, you know, in the sense of the lender community, right? Bringing them opportunities on the capital raise side, because we certainly service, you know, clients, some of our clients are on the lending side as well. So.
Absolutely. So Mitch, you mentioned a little bit about your background. Can you just walk us through, you know, where you've come from and how you found your way to Palm Tree?
Yeah, so I'm from a very small town in the west side of Michigan. I'm actually Kalamazoo is the bigger town that is probably someone might have heard of. Not my hometown is not a chance for that one. So I worked my way to Michigan State University, where, you know, being at Michigan State was an interesting time because, you know, we have done a lot of work, you know, around the business school since I've left. But when I was there, we certainly weren't a target school. We probably still aren't to some degree for consulting or investment banking. So what I did was, you know, try to network my way into the academic arena to try and understand what programs were out there to help me get into what I ultimately wanted to do, which was investment banking. And so there was a group being formed when I joined there called the Financial Markets Institute, which was a subset of the finance program and accounting program at Michigan State, directed at getting students into investment banking on Wall Street, in LA, Chicago, to some degree in the middle market. And so I started doing a bunch of research around what it all took to get into banking, you know, what type of banking did I want to go into? And that really translated into the middle market for me, because the more learning I did about the middle market, the more I realized it was and probably, by the way, a precursor to why I'm in consulting now, but it's a very consultative approach to doing M&A advisory. And M&A is the path I chose, where you're dealing with companies that possibly don't have a forecast. They might not have GAAP compliant financial statements. So you're really having to kind of hold the hand of the management team or ownership in some respects. Could be a 100-year-old family owned business. This is one of the biggest moments in their lives. And you are not only talking them through this process, but also advising them at the same time. It's a little different than going bulge bracket, where you have, you know, GE call and say, we're going to divest a portion of the business. They largely know what the valuation is. They know what the fee structure should be, and it's basically just an efficient transaction at that point. So I really like the idea of, you know, being really consulting these clients through these big opportunities. So I took a job at Plante Moran's corporate finance group to do that for the middle market in the Detroit area, focused in the plastics and packaging space for a couple of years. And then I had the opportunity to join another firm in the Detroit area that was basically getting founded at that time. So there was probably six or so people. We grew it to about 25. And in that practice, there were multiple work streams. It was restructuring, banking, and what we called outsourced FP&A. But it was like an afterthought at the time. It was something we got calls for to come supplement certain diligence teams on private equity or post-close work, helping stand up budgets, forecast, that kind of thing. And so about the 2013 timeframe, I realized that I was actually coming off of a 2-year assignment for that consulting practice. And I realized we were kind of missing an opportunity to build a business around this idea. And so that idea really was the post-close transition work that you see us doing at Palm Tree today. And so I put a marketing plan together, started networking it. I ran every deal from start to finish for 3 or 4 years, and built a team up around me. And then, you know, ultimately took a look at the marketplace, looked at all the different ideas I had for growing my practice, and realized that I was going to have to make some significant capital investments or take on significant risk to gain, you know, a financial due diligence practice or a more integrated investment banking practice. And Palm Tree had all those things. And I actually was, you know, friends with Pardis through my network. He and I know each other. That's the founder of the firm. And we started talking really the week before the pandemic hit. And we used that time, you know, a lot of people use that time different ways, but we used that time to strategically assess what me coming onto Palm Tree would look like. And we realized very quickly we were better off together than apart.
I love that. And so Mitch and Charles, can you both just speak to how the pandemic has affected your business, if at all? From what I would expect, I would think that one of the second order effects of the pandemic would be that M&A activity is going to accelerate. Are you seeing that, and how has that affected your business?
So what we experienced, I think, you know, let's go back a year or so, you know, even more than that, let's go back to like January of 2020. There was a lot of dry powder in the market, a lot of undeployed capital in the private equity space, a lot of money getting ready to be invested. Come March 15th, whatever you want to call it, pick your arbitrary date, the country shuts down, everything gets put on pause. And I think what we observed, at least at Palm Tree, was that our clients, the private equity firms, hit the pause button on deploying any of that capital. So what they did was they turned their efforts and their kind of their thought process inward, looking at the portfolio that they already had established. The idea is they want to make sure that they're not going to lose an asset, right? We go into some sort of economic crisis. Nobody knows what's going to happen with this pandemic. Half the world didn't even know what a pandemic was. So they hit the pause button on new investments, double-checked the health of their portfolios. Everything went on pause. Everything went on ice that was kind of underway. And then as the world started to get a little bit more comfortable with the new norm, as we're calling it, we started to see some of the more aggressive firms saying, okay, there's opportunity here. The money hasn't gone anywhere, that dry powder. So we started to see some investing happening in the summer going into the fall of 2020. Since then, and this is where I'll lean on Mitch to kind of pick up. I think the world has obviously changed quite a bit. That dry powder still hasn't gone anywhere, but the level of comfort in terms of deploying it in actual new investments is starting to increase. And with that, we're seeing a lot of new engagements. We've seen a lot of buy-side financial due diligence work come through towards the latter half of Q4 in 2020, which is a good indication that people are starting to become comfortable with new investments. And then that translates into some of the transition work that Mitch has seen and keeping us incredibly busy. So how'd I do there, Mitch? Close?
Yeah, you did great. That's a good lead in. So yeah, I mean, the business was affected right during COVID, of course. I mean, the world stopped for 3 months, right? And so we watched that happen. We got through that piece of it. We came out on the other side of it busier than we were when we went in, which is interesting, right? You wouldn't really think that to end Q4 to be busier than you were at the beginning of the year. But we didn't see what we didn't see. We didn't see the China slowdown. We didn't see some of that, you know, we didn't translate it, I should say, to why things were slower than what they should have been at that time. But, you know, to start off Q1, right, I just read a statistics the other day. There's $650 billion of U.S. M&A activity. In Q1 21, there was $250 billion of U.S. M&A activity in Q1 2020. Now, 2020 was cut off, you know, in March 15th, let's say, or March. But still, I mean, that kind of a ramp up is significant. You know, fundraising was down in 2020, but it was just a delay. So it looks like fundraising could achieve a record year. I heard something in the neighborhood of $330 billion of additional capital to be raised by private equity in 21 alone, right? So if you think about that, you know, that piece of it, and there's other, our clients specifically, we have some very large clients that are starting to do that big bulge bracket size deal, right? You saw a lot of add-on acquisitions happen in healthy sectors last year, but now you're starting to see the big platform acquisition come back. But I think that we may watch, you know, it's going to be interesting because the amount of competition out there in the private equity space is significant, and having a strategy outside of just the old, you know, buy and build or the buy and financial engineer and hope to hit your returns metrics, that legacy business model doesn't really work anymore. So we're seeing a lot of changes on that side of the house for sure.
That $650 billion number is staggering.
Staggering. Yeah. I was shocked actually, because there is some pent up demand in that number, right? Of course, but it's to me still three, you know, almost three times what it was. The, you know, Q1 20 was a shock to me as well.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
Looking to break into a top boutique like Palm Tree? join Black Belt today. Our next Black Belt cohort kicks off on June 1st and includes resume and cover letter edits, one-on-one interview coaching, 2 live group training sessions happening this June, and an all-access digital pass that includes 500 practice cases, countless case drills, and 8 video courses. If you're looking for a structured way to prepare for recruiting success, join Black Belt today. There are a handful of spots available. You can click the link in the show notes to learn more.
So Charles, right? Activities picking up, palm trees busier than they were last year. Does this mean that hiring is also picking up? And if so, what does Palm Tree look for in its recruits?
Fair question. Somewhat loaded question as well. I would say in general, yes, we are picking up hiring again for sure. We're doing so cautiously for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, it is difficult for us to hire directly into our mid-tier without actually training and kind of growing those folks from ground up. We tend to do most of our hiring at the junior tier, much like the big banks and other, you know, professional services firms like private equity firms. Teach the junior tier the way we do things and kind of teach them the palm tree way. So that's one obstacle is just the logistics of finding the right people. But we have found that, or at least I've observed in the last few months, that whereas candidates in those positions had been very reluctant to take the risk on moving. In other words, I have a job. We're in the middle of a global crisis. There is a pandemic. I don't want to ruffle feathers and make a change. Now those folks are starting to almost flip entirely, saying, look, there's opportunity out there. There are companies that are hungry for my talent. There are companies that might have more flexibility or better work-life balance or better culture, whatever it might be. So the actual candidate market is opening up quite a bit, which is super helpful. As we continue to add to our headcount, we're doing so mindfully, right? We don't want to just hire 100 people and kind of explode super quick and then collapse, you know, the whole, you know, fallen empire syndrome. Not what we're looking to do. Palm Tree, everyone at the firm is very, aware of our brand and what we're trying to do. The firm's been around for about 10 years, right? So we're established, but we're still very much entrepreneurial. And with that, the folks at the firm all want to see us succeed. So we're growing, we're doing so thoughtfully, we're doing so deliberately. So I wouldn't say we're exploding in terms of the amount of hiring we're doing, but it's definitely increased. Generally speaking, going to the second part of that question, we're in a tough position because we're a consulting firm, right? An advisory firm, but we're very, very, very hands-on, numbers oriented. So the folks that we have at the firm aren't necessarily just thinking about big picture strategy or operational improvements, or you need to have all that business sense, but you also need to really understand the ins and outs of finance and accounting, and you need to be able to put your hands on that and get into the weeds. Not only that, but be willing to dive into some of the messiest, ugliest situations you've ever seen. Mitch can attest to this better than I can, but kind of by virtue of dealing with, lower market, middle market, somewhere in between, a lot of our clients, a lot of our clients' portfolio companies, they're privately held. They're not necessarily public companies, right? They could be, profitable 50, 60, 80, $100 million, mom and pop shops, but they're lacking that sophistication. And with that, a lot of those finance and accounting functions that tend to make the numbers very, very messy. So during one of these transactions, when Mitch's team comes in and kind of parachutes in and says, okay, day one, now you own this new asset, we're going to go in and clean it out. We might be walking into a bit of a very messy situation. And that's where that hands-on finance and accounting skill set is really required, right? So in one regard, we're kind of looking for that investment banking skill set. You can do the modeling, you understand FP&A, you understand how to do trial balances, you understand how financial statements talk to each other. You can do some, three statement modeling and DCF modeling. But on the other side of that, we need people that understand operations, efficiencies, kind of have that business sense, and that most importantly, that private equity experience. It's kind of a tall order. So What I'm usually looking at when I'm doing college recruitment, for example, we do have partnerships with a number of the MBA programs. We do have a very robust internship program, both for undergraduates and for MBA students. It's this very tricky balance of, you know, we need the soft skills, you know, the person needs to be professional, be able to work with and speak to clients, present to clients, but also be able to have confidence when in the room with them to be able to convey the message, whether it's the message they want to hear or not. They have to have a bigger picture in terms of operational efficiencies. They have to understand, okay, what's the idea of this investment? Private equity firm XYZ just bought this company. They're not looking to just continue growth like an Amazon or a Facebook. They're looking to buy it, hold it, and sell it for a profit down the line, right? So we need to be able to go in with that mindset and understand those operational, points. But then at the same time, you also have to have that hands-on finance and accounting skill set, right? So a lot of times if we're recruiting not directly from college campuses, we're looking at the Big Four or other professional firms, professional services firms like private equity firms. Again, it's not often that someone would want to leave private equity to go into consulting, but sometimes they do. Sometimes they want to change it up or have a different work-life balance for sure. Or maybe they want to get more into the advisory side of it with less stake in the game, a little bit lower risk. In short, we're hiring. We are looking to add a number of folks to the headcount this year, mostly at the junior and the mid-tier. As things kind of progress, we're also going to look into adding some of those more strategic senior folks as well.
Yeah, I think, just to round that off a little bit. So we, for our addressable market is actually pretty large. If you think about it, we do some small end add on tuck in acquisitions on the diligence side to some degree. We go larger there. We also, on my transitions business, I'm up to probably $3-4 billion of revenue, because that's when you start to see companies really institutionalize from a finance department, right? Finance is typically underinvested almost exclusively across the middle market. And so they don't have any technology. They're asked to do more than what they should be doing. They're understaffed. That's where you see that dysfunction happen. So our middle market could be pretty large. It's just, again, those situations, now we don't get brought into a Fortune 500 business that has a top tier ERP system, a full slate of FP&A professionals, and a really nice financial consolidation tool sitting over the top of everything, right? So we're not going to get brought into that company, but we're going to get brought into the one with 25 ERP instances across the globe that has, different methodologies in each region of the globe. And we're going to have to go in and put everything around, put some organization around that, put some data, some dashboarding, some analytics. So heavy finance and accounting is critical. But some of the typical consulting mindset you need is, you have to be resourceful. You have to be able to think on your feet, right? You have to be presentable in the room. So, and we coach all that up as much as we can. But some of the kind of baseline finance and accounting stuff is what we try to seek out, especially for experienced hires.
I love it. If you like getting your hands dirty and bringing order to chaos, then maybe Palm Tree is the right place for you.
That's right.
So outside of that hands-on experience, and this is for both of you, Mitch, maybe if you want to speak to this first and then Charles, that's one kind of unique selling point or unique value proposition that Palm Tree brings to a candidate. What about the culture that the firm has cultivated? If I'm in that boat and I'm looking for that kind of experience, what can I expect if I was to come to work at Palm Tree, and why would I want to come and work with you all?
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect answer for me, right? Because I just joined relatively, I can't believe it's been 6 months already that I've been here, and I've done it all remotely. So I think you have to have an incredibly strong culture for that to come through in this remote environment. And I have to say, I felt like I've been here a lot longer than 6 months. It feels like I've been here for 5 years. Getting to know everybody, that culture came through in the interview process. It came through on in the first month of employment, you know, with the team. Now, again, I'm coming in a very senior role, right? So it's largely going to be maybe a little easier for someone like myself to transition in this environment. But I would say if it wasn't this environment, we'd be flying around the country and I probably wouldn't even have met half the firm at this point because we'd be at different clients and on site elsewhere, you know, who knows, right? In the country, depending on what team you're staffed with. And, so, you know, that was my number one focus because I came from a small firm in the Detroit area, right? We were close knit. We all really liked each other. And I wanted to make sure that when I came over to Palm Tree, in the firm being based on the West Coast, office in Chicago too, but not as many people in that office as in LA, I wanted to make sure we had a good rapport from a team perspective first, right? So, and I give this advice to anybody. This includes college, first year, 2 years out, 4 years out, you know, I know compensation is like the number one thing everybody thinks about. Of course it is. However, compensation will come, right? If you're motivated, if you like what you're doing, if you're incentivized to do well in that role and you see a path forward in that role, you know, compensation will take care of itself. Focus on the culture. You can't change that culture about, you know, wherever you're going, right? If you like where you're at and you love where you work and you like the people that you work with, it makes every bit of difference in your overall mindset. You know, a few extra dollars at the end of the month isn't gonna make you much happier. So, you know, that's my perspective. Charlie's been around a little longer than I have, so I'll have him give you the more established view.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Mitch, you hit the nail on the head. You know, the firm was largely built around, you know, culture as well, right? When Pardis, our firm's, you know, founder and still sitting president, founded the firm, he wanted to take the best available practices from Big Four, from management consulting, from investment banking, from private equity. He wanted to put all these skill sets under one roof. But he also wanted to do it in a way that was sustainable, and the way that he viewed that, first and foremost, you know, he has to like the people that he's working with, and we have to like the people that we're working with. But that also trickles down into our clients. I think our clients really enjoy working with us. They know when they get Palm Tree, they get a certain personality type, you know, communicative, diligent, you know, autonomous, easy to communicate with, easy to work with, friendly. That culture has been, you know, kind of created, maintained, and we're continuing to foster that as we grow. And that's actually been the biggest challenge that I've had is, you know, when I did join the team, they said, look, we want to scale up and make more of a national footprint. But we want to do that while also maintaining this culture that we have. And the culture that we have is, you know, it's a lot easier to maintain when you're a firm of, you know, 30, 40, 50 people than it is when you start hitting that 500, 600, you know, 700 person mark. So that's kind of the tricky balance that we have going forward as we grow is how do we maintain this culture? And I think it's, you know, largely through networking. A lot of the hires that we make, a lot of the best hires we make does come through either first, second, or even sometimes third degrees separation, you know, network. But you know, it's a good starting point rather than, accepting an application online. I would say Palm Tree's not alone in that we probably, you know, prioritize most of our hires, through our network, you know, cause well, you can speak to it.
I think that's right. I will tell anybody this who will listen. I will hire you for a culture fit over a technical fit every day of the week. I can teach you anything that I want you to learn, that you want to learn. We will put you in that position to succeed. And we will give you the training. You know, Palm Tree's investing in detailed modeling analytics training for their new hires, you know, even current staff. We can train you on the technicals. Being a personality fit is critical.
I love where this conversation has gone because we have a lot of students and young professionals that listen to the podcast. And we've talked about, hey, you know, compensation isn't king, right? Networking is key. Could you each just, you know, share one other kind of best piece of advice that you would have either for your younger self or for a young professional today who's just starting out their consulting career?
Yeah, for just getting started, look, I think the number one thing, I probably did too much of this, right? But the number one thing I say is put your head down and work, right? Work and absorb, though. That's the difference. Is where I did a lot of undergrad, working hard in school, and then maybe even my first year of banking, working really hard, but I wasn't doing a ton of absorbing what I was doing. Ask questions, understand why, get to the other side of the task at hand so that you can build upon it, right? So, but you have to get the reps to start doing that. So get as many reps as you can get as deep into those reps as you can, ask good questions. But that's the one thing that's important to me is that just no egos, check the egos at the door. We know you're successful in your college past. We know you're successful in your past career. We also want you to be successful at palm tree, but I want you to come in and say, I want to learn everything there is to learn about this. And then then it'll just be merit-based as we go. I mean, we are, you know, that's the one thing I will say about palm tree is that full meritocracy approach to talent. And if you're good, you're going to be moved up the chain very fast. And if, you know, and that's just how it works. So, but it takes reps, it takes experience, and it does take a little bit of time, unfortunately, to get those. You know, I know everybody wants everything right now. But believe me, it's worth it. If you sit through those reps and you absorb them and you take them and build upon them, you're going to be in a much better position faster in your career than you would be without that.
And I think just to expand on that a little bit, the humility of recognizing where you are in your career and that, you know, the idea of overlooking the bottom line, the comp, you know, to find the path that you need to take to get to where you want in your career. So, you know, I speak to a lot of students who are recruiting for their, you know, their summer internships, and it becomes apparent to me that they really are just chasing the highest paying internship. In my opinion, that's not necessarily the best way to go about it, because the internship, you know, is just a gateway into your career. So you should be chasing the experience, and the compensation should be a kind of a side factor.
Yeah. And my, you know, look, if consulting is where you want to be long term, right? Long term, you need to start thinking about what next steps do I need to take in the career, right? So you start to look at the next level up. What are the things they're doing that I'm not doing? You know, and it goes so far as to, I remember when I was executing deals fully from start to finish, taking a break, going out, networking with folks, coming back to the office, you know, just to start to build the network to potentially be at that managing director level where I'm selling work and I'm bringing clients in, right? It goes as far, it goes all the way up your career on things that you could be doing more of potentially, you know, if that's ultimately where you want to be right now. Again, if you need to hit a certain, we know palm tree is probably not the last stop for everybody, right? Which is completely fine. But, you know, making sure that you're engaged and building upon that base while you're there is important, because it'll, you know, exponentially impact your exit opportunities as well. So
I love that. It's what we're always telling, you know, the students and the folks that we work with at Management Consulted, is that there's more to life than just comp and more than just money, even though that's an important piece of the equation.
Hugely important. Yeah.
Especially when you're early on in your career, if you can build the right skills, you can build the right experience, you can set yourself up for the right exit opportunities, the comp will come.
That's right. And it's hard though for someone coming out of school, because they're, you know, student loans and you know, not having a real income yet, and you're like getting that first chance at it. It's very easy for me to sit back and say, oh, it'll come, don't worry. And it's, you know, but believe us, it will come. You are highly motivated, highly, you know, very well educated, smart professionals, driven professionals. You will be successful, I promise.
Well, Mitch, Charles, as we wrap up today, you know, if folks have liked what they've heard from you, where can they learn more about palm tree?
I think the best thing to do would probably, first and foremost, we do have resources online. Obviously, check out the website, check out LinkedIn. But feel free to reach out to me directly on LinkedIn. You know, the folks at the firm, my colleagues, my palm tree family, everyone's very open to, you know, chatting with people who are interested in joining palm tree or learning about it. But you got to remember, the billable staff, the Mitches, you know, everyone else at the firm, they are quite busy. Whereas my job is, quite frankly, this. It's to be accessible and to, you know, chat with students or, you know, tenured professionals, whoever it might be, who's either interested in joining Palm Tree or interested in leveraging our services. So feel free to reach out. I'm very accessible on LinkedIn.
I love that. And you can find Charles's LinkedIn in the show notes. Well, Mitch, Charles, it was a pleasure to speak to you today. Thanks for joining Strategy Simplified. I enjoyed our conversation, enjoyed learning more about Palm Tree and about the work that you all are doing. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having us. Really enjoyed our time.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. As always, if you like what you heard, please like, share, and subscribe. If you want to learn more about Palm Tree, check out the show notes for links to their LinkedIn and website. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.